DeSanto Propane is four generations strong as a trustworthy family-owned business with unmatched customer service. Go online at DeSantoPropane.com for more info or call toll-free at 1-800-752-4574. Since 1937, the difference has been DeSanto Propane.
Do you want to know what's happening in the Finger Lakes? We do too. We're going in depth with decision makers in the heart of upstate New York to get the answers you need. From the team of FingerLakes1.com, this is Inside the FLX.
All right, welcome to another episode of Inside the FLX. It is time for our monthly conversation with Cayuga County Sheriff Brian Skank. Sheriff, thanks so much for being here. Let's start with the topic on everyone's mind, total solar eclipse. What are your expectations and how's the team preparing over there in Cayuga County?
Sure. This is a difficult one because there's really no way to gauge just how many people are going to come to our communities here in Central New York and take advantage of the view here. But we're planning for the worst. I can say that we've been planning for a while with all of our community partners and really focusing on how are we going to handle a huge influx of traffic if we have a lot of tourism and a lot of people visit here. But yeah, it's very challenging. We just don't know. There's no way to gauge how many people are coming. We do know that there's going to be a number of events that'll be in our community and counties surrounding us. We know a lot of the hotels and places to stay are booked up. Campgrounds are booked up. So I think that's indicative that we're going to have quite a few people visit our community. But just how much traffic we'll have, it's really hard to say. But we're working to plan for the worst. We'll be prepared with all of our community partners. And I'm certain it'll be a safe day for everybody to come and join us in viewing.
I'm curious, what does preparation look like in Cayuga County because of the geography of the county? Obviously, a lot of real estate. You've got, obviously, Auburn. You've got some urban areas. You've got some towns. But you've also got some really rural spaces, too. What's that balance look like? How your team's approaching that?
Sure. So the eclipse is going to impact the northern end of our county here in Cayuga, so from basically the city of Auburn north, and we've worked with Auburn City PD. They're going to have some events, and I believe that, you know, they've got everything under control in the city. But we're focused on the rural areas and the state roadways to the north of the city of Auburn and the central part of our community, really focusing on making sure that our state roadways remain open, that we can move traffic if we need to through those areas. But we've got a lot of extra patrols that will be on that day. We're going to be setting up a command post that will be manned with our state police partners, someone from our 911 center, New York State DOT, certainly members from our agency. And we'll be working very closely that day to monitor traffic and answer calls for service. And all of those agencies are going to have extra people out there to address things as they pop up. You know, I feel that we're probably not going to see as many folks here as some people are thinking. I think that things are going to run smoothly and flow okay, but we're planning for the worst. If things do get jammed up, we're going to have the resources there to make sure we can move traffic in a safe way and answer calls for service if needed. We'll have extra people out there to do that.
Are there any traffic, updates that people could know about now? We've heard and seen some rumors, I guess, on social media about like certain roads being closed. Have any decisions like that been made yet, or where does that happen, or how does that happen?
Not here in Cayuga County. There's nothing that's going to be closed in advance as far as trying to redirect traffic or anything. But, you know, in a worst case scenario, if the day of, if something, you know, popped up or something was jammed up or we needed to close roads to keep things, you know, moving in a more efficient manner, you know, we'll do that the day of. But again, it's very challenging to plan for this because we just don't know what this is going to look like. But I'm certain that we have everything in place that we need to deal with any traffic situation or any call for service that we might ordinarily have. And, you know, with an influx of a lot of people, you're going to have additional calls for service that are going to be, you know, needed, I'm certain. So that's why we're planning to have extra resources out there to address that. But I'm, you know, as far as your question, no road closures here in Cayuga County in advance. We'll address those things as the need, if the need arises that day.
Comparable to a July 4th, that's one comparison that I've heard a few people talk about, especially given that we are in the Finger Lakes and with lake traffic and things like that.
Yeah, I think what we're going to see, my feeling on this, it's going to be, you know, I look at our community, the village of Fairhaven, fireworks that we have at Emerson Park in the town of Owasco. Those are very heavily attended events with a lot of traffic. I think we're going to see something similar to that, but just more so countywide from, you know, the northern end of our county. And I think traffic's going to flow fine. I think there's going to be, you know, heavy traffic in spots. But I don't think that, you know, it'll be anything beyond what we normally see with those large scale events in those individual communities. It's just going to be a broader scale throughout the whole county.
It's going to be a busy weekend. Okay, so let's shift gears a little bit here. The Sheriff's Office recently joined other agencies for training in domestic and teen dating violence. What can you tell us about that one?
We did. So every year we try to team up with community action programs of Cayuga Seneca. Here in Cayuga County and along with the Auburn Police Department to offer a day of training for our law enforcement officers, our domestic violence advocates, and other community providers with a different topic each year. But we did host that again this year on March 20th at the Springside Inn. And our keynote speaker was Ashley Bendixson, who is a nationally renowned speaker on teen dating violence. She has a very interesting story. She was a victim of teen dating violence when she was younger, and she does a great job talking about what that looked like from a victim perspective. And I think that was really helpful for our law enforcement folks and our community providers to, you know, just hear what that looks like from somebody that's really lived it, to learn, you know, what could have been done better, what we are doing right. And I think that was a great training. And it also gave us the opportunity to come together with advocates and law enforcement officers to talk a little bit about how we can work better together, making sure we keep those close working relationships. And I think it was certainly a success this year. And I'd like to give a quick shout out to the Katie Soce Foundation and the Witchy Women of the Finger Lakes for providing some funding so that we were able to provide the speaker and the training and a lunch that day. Without them, we couldn't have done it.
How important is training like that, given the frequency, I guess, of domestic related incidents that your deputies on a daily basis are responding to?
It's extremely important. You know, training is a perishable skill. Can't just do it once and then believe that you're going to have those skills forever. So, you know, we train in some topics like this frequently, and this is very important. In our community, if you combine all of our responses between the Auburn Police Department, the New York State Police, our agency in Cayuga County, we're handling upwards of 2,000 domestic incidents a year. And that's a big number for a rural community like ours. So, you know, these types of trainings are very important due to the volume of these types of calls that we address.
Yeah. Okay. So sort of connected. I don't want to completely disconnect this next issue or this next topic from the one we just talked about. The mental health crisis, obviously continuing to pose a challenge for your staff at the jail. How are you navigating that currently? And how does that fit in with the sort of challenge around domestic incidents that we are seeing, the increase in domestic incidences over the last 20 years with that mental health backdrop?
We are dealing with mental health crisis situations every day, whether it's within our jail facility, whether it's out on the road. When I first came on the job back in 1997, you know, periodically I might deal with somebody in crisis that was struggling with mental illness. Today I look at how we respond to calls and what we see for call volume. It's almost daily, you know, instead of occasionally when I first came on the job. So it's very challenging. We don't have enough resources out there to meet the need when it comes to mental health, you know, therapists and doctors and providers. And it's a real struggle when, you know, people that need help in our community, sometimes it takes them, you know, weeks to get in to see a provider. So we're struggling to try to meet that need, you know, and I think, you know, there are resources out there that are available, but I think we need to continue to make sure that this remains a priority for our local, state, and national elected representatives to address these issues, because I think they're going to continue to be very challenging moving forward. And, you know, as you discussed, you know, their impact with, you know, domestic violence or other types of crimes or criminal activity. Unfortunately, many people that struggle with mental illness do ultimately become involved with the criminal justice system. They might wind up in our jail. And, you know, there are times when we just frankly don't have the resources within our facility to appropriately address somebody's needs in this area, and we have to seek outside support. But, you know, it's just a very concerning issue. It's challenging. But, you know, there are resources out there available. You just have to really push to get those. And I just like to highlight, you know, if you're listening to this and you know somebody that's struggling or you need help in a crisis situation, that the number 988 is available. You can contact that number, learn what resources are available in your community, speak to somebody who's trained to deal with those types of things right then. Certainly call 911 in an emergency. But, you know, it might take you some time to get to a provider or to get to those services, but keep pushing, you know, seek those services out if you need them and don't give up.
Can you talk to us a little bit about the process that takes place if one of your deputies at the jail or a corrections officer at the jail identifies someone who maybe needs more services than you guys can provide, like what that process looks like and where do you guys turn for help? Because I would imagine with limited resources, at some point you have to reach out to someone else to try and solve the problem.
We do. So we do have Cayuga County Mental Health embedded into our jail here. So we do have a full-time therapist within our facility. And we also have a part-time therapist from Cayuga County Mental Health, as well as doctors that come in at least once a week and see individuals here. So if we see that we're having difficulty meeting the need, we certainly talk to our in-house providers and seek additional resources from outside. We have had to, in a number of cases over the last few years, seek to take some of our incarcerated individuals that are in really, really serious need of additional care and transfer them to a psychiatric facility while they're awaiting trial or, you know, determining if they're competent to stand trial. So we've had to shift a number of individuals from our jail to those facilities that do have the resources to address these needs. But, you know, it is challenging. Our mental health staff here is, you know, they're working constantly to try to address the need. And the reality is, you know, we could always use more services out in our communities. We could use more services in this area. And this isn't unique to Cayuga County. This is everywhere throughout the state and across the nation.
I would assume that also is something that becomes a bit of a financial challenge and burden for you guys, because if you're bringing these individuals outside of the county to other places, I would assume that if the county isn't covering it, the county does have to foot the bill to provide the services wherever those might be, you know, received. Is that sort of how that goes and why the advocacy at the state level with lawmakers in the governor's office is so important?
It is. It's extremely costly. Our Cayuga County Mental Health Department has to come up with that money from their budget to try to pay for those costs. And recently, our mental health director did have to go to our legislature and seek additional money that wasn't budgeted for 2024 in anticipation of running way over on paying for these services. And, you know, this is something that the state of New York used to cover 50% of the cost for with local municipalities when we would have to shift somebody from a jail into a facility like this. Yep. But they've pushed that cost fully onto the local municipalities. So the state no longer helps us with funding. But, you know, the state really needs to step up and make, you know, additional services for people with these types of needs available so that we can bring the cost down, because it's really not going to be sustainable if we can continue to see this increase in need for specialized care.
An incredible challenge there for sure. Let's shift gears here once again and talk a little bit about Project Lifesaver. We've talked about it before through our conversations here on Inside the FLX, but can you give us sort of an overview of what Project Lifesaver is and of course the training that your team recently undertook on that front?
Sure. I love this program and I appreciate the opportunity to periodically remind listeners that it is available. So Project Lifesaver is a program that gives us the tools to help bring loved ones home when there's somebody that might wander away, whether they're, you know, dealing with some type of dementia or Alzheimer's, or, you know, if they have some other condition that, you know, will tend to make them wander from the home. We're able to provide a wristband, which provides a transmission to specialized equipment that our deputies have to pick up that signal. And if somebody has one of those transmitter wristbands on their wrist and they wander from the home, we can get to that area quickly with our equipment and track them down. The great thing about it is we can also utilize our equipment from the air. So if we have a situation where we can't immediately find somebody near the home, we can really expand our radius in the search by utilizing a helicopter with our partners with the Onondaga County Sheriff's Office or the state police to expand that search area. And really, you know, we can turn what could be a search that could go on for hours or days into just minutes by being able to track somebody down quickly and make sure they return home safely. So I do like to remind folks that is available. And through our Cayuga County Office for the Aging, people can contact them for more information and to get set up with that program. And I'm certain that I believe most every county within your listening area also has that available service as well. So I would encourage anyone that is struggling with that to take advantage of Project Lifesaver.
Sure, and definitely important given that we are seeing an aging population across the region and in every county we cover here at FingerLakes1.com. Let's talk a little bit about scams. We're always talking about scams, it seems like, whenever I talk to folks in law enforcement. It is crazy to me. There's just no limit to the degree and the breadth of these scams. You know, whether we're talking about identity theft scams, job scams, it's scams using AI, the phone scams that we hear that target seniors. What are the ones, you know, when you're looking in Cayuga County, what are the ones that concern you most right now?
Yeah, unfortunately, this is a topic we do talk about a lot, but the only way we can combat this is to prevent it in the first place, because once somebody's scammed, we almost can never get that money back. It's gone. But the ones that concern me the most are the ones that you know, prey on our elderly population or individuals in our community that are very trusting and just want to help. It's really unfortunate, but you know, lottery scams, we're still seeing those where somebody will reach out and say that you won some type of prize or lottery, but you need to pay a fee to get that. I always tell folks, in any situation, if it seems too good to be true, it is absolutely too good to be true. Don't fall into that. Don't fall prey to that. But we're also seeing scams quite frequently. You know, the grandson scam or granddaughter scam where a perpetrator might reach out to a grandparent, imply that they're that grandchild and say that they need help, whether it's they're in jail for something that happened or that they're in the hospital or they need money for whatever reason. And, you know, in those types of scams, there's usually an urgency. The perpetrator is going to make it sound urgent that this, you know, that this money needs to be wired or that gift cards need to be purchased to pay for this. And it's urgent. So, you know, I would say anytime something like that is presented to you, please reach out to the family member first and, you know, try to confirm through another family member or that family member that this is something legitimate. But oftentimes, you know, these scammers are just preying on the, you know, the trust of a family member that wants to help someone out. So educate your family members, especially elderly folks, if you think they could potentially fall prey to this. Let them know that these scams are out there, because, again, the only way we combat this is to stop it in the first place. A lot of these scammers are outside the country. We just can't get our hands on them. And once the money is wired or transferred, it's gone. So we can't talk about it enough. I'll continue to bring this up periodically, you know, when we're able to do these types of interviews. And I appreciate the opportunity to do that. But we've got to make sure that we prevent it in the first place and just continually remind, you know, people that, you know, they need to steer clear of these types of situations when they're presented to them.
We've also heard a lot about an uptick in scams where folks, the perpetrators, are actually impersonating law enforcement. Could you just sort of give us a quick overview of what, for example, the sheriff's office might contact a person by phone for and what they absolutely would not, for example, like soliciting money for bail or something along those lines, which is one of the more common threads that we've heard in recent months?
Sure. We will never, ever do that. You're not going to see a law enforcement agency in any jurisdiction call you and say, you know, you need to come up with X amount of dollars and wire that to me to, you know, keep from being arrested because you have a warrant or, you know, you're going to need bail money and you need to send money. You have a fine that you need to pay us right now. And again, the urgency, if somebody's calling you impersonating a police officer and say you need to wire this right now, it's a scam, but we're not going to reach out to individuals and do that. But that is another, like you said, it's hard to keep up with all of these different types of scams, but there are people out there impersonating us. There's also people impersonating benevolent associations that reach out and say, hey, we're supporting, you know, this agency. And if you want to support them, donate this money. I would caution anyone to do a little homework before they donate. We certainly appreciate individuals that donate to legitimate causes and support the work we do, but there's a lot of scams out there surrounding them. So reach out to your local law enforcement agency and say, hey, I just got this call relative to this. Is this legitimate? You know, call their non-emergency lines and, you know, just ask. And if we get those calls, we're going to let you know.
Absolutely. Sheriff, as always, appreciate the time. Thanks for taking it this month. We will talk to you in April.
Great. Take care.